Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're going to be discussing boats or ships, that sort of thing, in entertainment, as well as the Transformers Bad Movie Night. We're going to talk about the original Transformers movie and why it's not so bad. Maybe people are remembering it poorly. Let's get on with the show. My name's Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
Wonderful. Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And Troy won't be here as well as for the reasons for last week. He took a couple weeks off. So you guys should know that you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Or join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider. We're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. And you can support us at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider, which is what the episode later in the show is going to be about. It's Transformers. It's our Bad Movie Night. In case you've never heard Bad Movie Night, this is what we give to our listeners and supporters of Patreon once a month, as well as a bonus episode if you're in that respective tier. It's where we look at a movie that critics or fans deemed a bad movie, but we think isn't so bad. But first, let's talk about boats and ships, because you know what? We're not actually here this week. This is going to be very, very short in terms of content, because we're actually on a cruise all together. Every Hollywood Outsider host that is alive, sorry Justin McCumber, is on that boat.
Damn, that got dark.
As sorry.
Yeah, that
didn't mean that. Didn't mean that.
No, we love and miss him.
Well, no, we do, but that's still got dark.
Yeah.
I'm going to create an inflatable Justin doll. I'll carry him around on the ship.
So we
have his presence on the boat. It'll be like a life jacket that I carry with me.
That's probably good, because I've seen a lot of news recently about people falling off cruise ships, dying on cruises, all this other kind of crazy stuff.
So. Now who's getting dark?
Okay, first, that kid did not fall off.
One jumped, but there's others who have fallen.
I bet you there's a few that have been thrown.
Probably.
Pushed. Nudged.
Amanda.
Yeah, if you don't hear me again, I'm dead.
Yeah, it wasn't
Jeez.
Me.
Easy.
It was probably John, but it was probably my fault, so.
Right. She wasn't wearing the Justin McCumber inflatable life jacket.
Wouldn't that be awesome? The inflatable life jacket. We walk around and Justin's on your back, because he was always on mine.
Like, Justin would be having the biggest smile, looking down from wherever it is he's looking, maybe the spaceship, knowing Justin, but he'd be looking down and he would be like, I am on Amanda's back. This makes me happy.
Oh my God.
And he would find a way to try to get to the front.
It was pervy and creepy. Let's move on.
That was Justin. Well, I love him, but that was Justin.
His inflatable hands are supporting you in the front.
Oh my God.
You know what? I'm not opposed to that, because you don't understand how heavy these things are.
Okay.
I
get back to business.
I'm out of here.
What is happening? So myself, John, Amanda, Trey Heinrichs, Brian Williams, Scott Clark, we will all be on the cruise with many Hollywood Outsider listeners, as well as some family and friends. It's a big event this time. We have a lot of people going, and it should be pretty fun. I'm sorry. Several Patreon supporters are going to be on there too, which is awesome. So it's a big love fest without any of the weirdness that John and Amanda just described. It's normal weirdness.
The weirdness is going to be there, but it's just going to be on camera. But
probably longtime listeners that weren't able to come on the cruise are like, great, now you guys can stop talking about it.
Right. There's that. I think what do we have? I think there's a total of 50, 60 people coming.
I don't even know.
Somewhere around there.
Something like that. Yeah.
I really think that the next time we do this, we should do it maybe like a 4-day cruise, and then invite people to come and see how many people we can get.
So we're going to have a quick topic discussion on boats and ships and entertainment, and then we're going to go ahead and let the Transformers Bad Movie Night roll. Are you guys excited for the new Transformers movie? It should be out by the time they hear this. I would not have seen it, because I'll be on a boat, like I said.
Right.
I'm on a boat, motherfucker. I'm on a boat. The Lonely Island, for yes. those of
yes.
you who
we,
aren't.
We yes, we understood.
Yeah.
We understood.
No, okay. we knew.
So back to Transformers. Excited? Not excited?
Well, you know what? Apparently, Amanda is not, and she's just being kind. I'm excited for it.
Okay.
And I have been very much against anything that is related to the Bayverse of the Transformers, but as long as this is in the same vein as Bumblebee, which was a really great movie, I think that this is going to be a lot of fun and really good. I am Groot. Anyhow, I think that this is going to be a pretty epic movie, and unfortunately I think it's a little too soon to make this movie, because they could have done something where they gave all the primary actors in this, or the primary Transformers in this, their own story, like they did Bumblebee. That might have been great, but that, again, Marvel's already done that, so it's also going to be frowned upon by a lot of people, or people are going to make the comparison right away. So we're going to have, you know, I'm only talking about what's already been in the trailers, but we're going to see the Maximals, which has Optimus Primal, and Optimus Primal is a very cool character, and we're going to see the rest of the Maximals with him. We're also going to see the, it doesn't seem like we're going to have the, we're going to have the Terracons and...
Oh my God, I didn't ask for
the Predacons.
Play-by-play. I just want to know if you were looking forward to it.
Are you looking forward to seeing the cons that are there and the cons that aren't?
Yeah. Go listen to the summer movie preview if you want the whole breakdown. Just are you excited?
Clearly he is.
Clearly I am, but I'm just going to...
Decepticons and Autobots and who gives a shit of cons. And yeah, I get it. Lots of those things. All right.
John just got really nerdy, okay?
You know, side note, I started talking to somebody at the gym, and she goes... because we were talking about shoes and the different shoes, and I knew, like, whatever her problem was, I knew which shoe to point her to. And she's like, well, I get really numb toes. I'm like, well, you need to be in ultras if you're getting numb toes. Yeah, but then I'm also experiencing
plantar
fasciitis.
Plantar fasciitis. And I'm like, well, if you have plantar fasciitis, you want something that has a drop to it. So you want at least a 5mm drop. So that's topo. So you have the wide.
What is the fucking point?
She goes.
I don't know, but hold on. He's talking about plantar fasciitis, which I do have, so I'm kind of interested in hearing what the advice is.
My head hurts so much.
What about Transformers?
So plantar fasciitis, Amanda.
No!
The shoe you want to get is a shoe that has a drop to it, so that
five millimeters.
You want at least a 5mm drop in your shoe, because if you're going flat footed, that's part of the reason why you have the plantar fasciitis.
It is.
But anyhow, she stops me and she goes,
concussion from banging my head on the computer.
So she stops me and she says,
a helmet.
She goes, hey, are you like some sort of shoe expert? Like, do you do research for like the shoe stores here in town? I go, no, I'm just a big shoe nerd.
All of that because I said nerd!
Jesus Christ.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Somebody just wrecked their car on purpose.
Somebody just fell into the ocean. I guarantee you, roughly when they're hearing this, somebody fell into the ocean.
Son, I have a story for everything. It's not always a good story, but it's always a story.
Jesus.
Oh, Jesus
that
Christ.
Was not worth any of
so
the
investment. I'm not looking forward to Transformers. I don't care about big machines doing big machine things, but the cast is stacked, so I'm going to watch it at some point.
We're moving on, because I'm just too angry about that whole thing. That was a... Oh, God damn it. All right, Amanda, do you know the difference between a boat and a ship?
A boat feels smaller, a ship feels big. Okay. Ship has a lot more amenities, has a lot more sure. stateroom opportunities,
Boats are more for like inland and coastal areas, and then ships are for ocean going typically.
So you can't take a boat all the way out into the middle of the ocean?
You can. You may not
Dexter
come back.
Dexter told me you can.
In a hurricane.
And Dexter told me you can survive it too.
Yeah, Dexter's wrong.
It's all about the seafaringness of it all. If it's designed to, if it can survive
a
storm out
in seafaringness,
fairingness.
Oh, okay.
Well, it is Pride Month.
It is Pride Month. Hi, I'm Royal Caribbean.
Don't.
That's my stage name.
Don't.
This is gonna get yourself in trouble. Yes, trouble.
This is not 1985.
Right. My bad.
All right. Well, that's the difference. So, here's two things. There's two famous boat movies that have captured the excitement of movie and TV buffs for a long time, right? So Speed 2 is the first one. It was a horrible bomb. It was one of the biggest bombs of all time. And it should have been a huge hit because Speed is extremely popular. So why do you think Speed 2 bombed specifically?
Well, there's a ton of reasons why it bombed. One, because it didn't fit the theme to the first movie. Two, because it didn't have Keanu Reeves. Three, because there was absolutely no chemistry between anybody at all in that movie. And also, it didn't make... It, you know, you got Sandy Bullock, who's like America's sweetheart. I'm going to call her Sandy because I want to. And you got Sandy Bullock, who everyone adores and loves. And she's moved on from Keanu Reeves to Jason Patrick. That's a downgrade, isn't it?
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
You know, you got all of these things that kind of turn into an obvious money grab. And nobody really wanted to see a boat crash.
No, and I mean, it's a collision course into a giant oil tanker, and Willem Dafoe, I will say, was giving it his all. I mean,
could you just use that as the reason the movie didn't work out also, though?
What's that?
Have you seen his face in this movie?
Willem Dafoe?
Yes, his facial reactions are a little scary.
A little over the top. A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
When are they not a little over the top?
True.
I mean... It was called Cruise Control. Why would you make a sequel without the star? And I just love that Keanu Reeves has made a lot. I mean, he's made some great movies. He's made a lot of bad movies. And he said, I'm not coming back because of the script. And I'm just like, what? How bad was the fucking script that Keanu Reeves said no? Because at that time, he was saying yes to a lot of stuff. And still, no. And then they go ahead and make it. And they're like, you know what? Let's bring the lady that was on the bus that didn't really do anything. But drive a bus, she'll be part of the action, and we'll bring in Jason Patrick, you know, a lost boy, and we'll make him an action hero, I guess. It was weird. Like, the whole idea of it just felt like Hollywood trying to will a hit into existence that wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. But I love that John called her Sandy, and if he wouldn't have said anything after, people who know Sandra would probably know that she goes by Sandy, and they would have thought that they were just pals. People could have thought you had an in, John.
Yeah, nobody would ever believe that me and Sandy are pals.
I sure didn't. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I was like, you should stop calling her Sandy. Her name is Sandra to you.
You don't get that.
they would be like, does she have a restraining order against you? And I'd be like, yeah, she probably does. Just from calling her Sandy.
I love the tagline on the poster was Rush Hour Hits the Water. What?
Ew.
It makes no sense.
It's not good.
It's just all tacky. Now flipping that, right? Let's flip that a little bit and kind of look at the most popular boat movie ever made, which is Titanic. So why did Titanic do so fantastically? Because if people don't remember, they were under the gun because the budget had ballooned to like $200 million. James Cameron famously wasn't getting paid because he forfeited his own salary because the budget had ballooned so much. They had recreated this whole crash, this whole boat and everything else. And, you know, basically it was supposed to be the most epic failure of all time and ended up being one of the biggest hits of all time, the biggest hit of all time for a long time. Manda, what say you? Why did this one work?
Well, I mean, you got Kate and Leo and their chemistry was off the charts. You had a little bit of nudity, right? Nobody's gonna say no to a little bit of nudity, but it was fun. It made you want to be on that ship while also giving you like the historical element to it and kind of showing you, oh, this did really actually happen where the ship did go down in the water. And they approached it not from the fear standpoint. It was all approached from love and from, you know, just trying to figure out what you want for your life and youthfulness and being forced into a marriage. And especially at that time, still women didn't, I wouldn't say that women didn't have their rights. They still had rights, obviously, but still wasn't the same. It still wasn't the same, right? That it is today.
No.
And so seeing a woman who is kind of diverting from the path that she was forced onto and doing what she wanted to do, that's very freeing.
I had somebody point this out to me not too long ago. And I thought that was, it was an interesting just comparison. If you look at a cruise ship today, what do you see? You see a lot of people in bathing suits and swimsuits walking all over and everything else. But when Titanic collapsed, you would have seen them in complete dresses. That's a big change. I mean, and that was only like 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, you notice the same change when it comes to airplanes and airports. 30, 40 years ago, let's go 40 years ago, it used to be an event to be able to go on a plane. And I remember because we were going on a plane, we had to get dressed up in a specific way. There was no going on a plane in t-shirts and shorts or anything like that. It was a full on shirt and slacks and dress shoes, and those were the things that were necessary for my family. And it looked like everybody else on the plane kind of dressed the same way in the 80s. And as time has gone on, people were like in their practical pajamas as they go.
Well, I mean specifically in terms of women, you would never see a woman walking around in a swimsuit like that wasn't a one piece, a very hefty one piece, maybe a blanket of some
hefty
sort.
Hefty one piece.
Hefty one piece. But yeah, times have changed. It's crazy. I think the characters were magical. The special effects were awesome. That movie holds up. I just watched it in a theater not too long ago. It's still one of the best directed films I've ever seen. James Cameron, you know, I know that King of the World thing is made fun of all the time, deservedly so, but he should have been crowned King of the World that year. It's a fantastic film. Fantastic.
Truly is.
We're going to talk more about stuff on water. But before we do that, I want to say thank you to our supporters on Patreon because you keep the podcast going. I want to give a special shout out to our studio heads, Stanley, Mandy, Christina, and Doug. Two of those we're on a boat with right now. So Mandy and Christina, I look forward to seeing you. We will have seen you. Maybe we'll have given you our life jackets of Justin McCumber by now. They support us at the highest tier and have an open invitation to join us on the show, as you could too if you wanted to. Also, our script writers who donate at the $10 level, Jay, Paula, and Ty. I believe Paula's on the cruise with us as well. And our shooting stars who donate at the $5 level, Andrew, C-Rick, Christian, Dave, Grillbox, Jose, Justina, Kimberly, Laura, Manuel, Nate, Rebecca, Stefan, Tammy, Virginia, and Wayne. Nate was going to be on there, but circumstances prevented him. And also those with leading roles are also appreciated. Alexander, Chris, Josh, Jennifer, Nate, and Thomas. Josh was also supposed to be there, but unfortunately couldn't make it. But thank you, everyone, for all your support. We always appreciate you. You can enjoy bonus content like Bad Movie Night, which you're going to hear shortly, and a monthly bonus episode, depending on which tier you subscribe to. And you could get that at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. We don't have any reviews this week, but our topic is, like we've been talking about, boats and ships. So do you guys like movies and TV shows that take place on the sea? Because some people don't really care for that.
I do, from the standpoint of like a horror, because I'm scared of the ocean.
Really? Why the fuck are you going on a boat?
Because I'm going to be on the boat and then I'm going to be on the island. I'm not going to be in the middle of the water.
Okay, fair enough.
If I was swimming in the middle of the water, that would be different. If I fall off the cruise ship, things are going to be real bad, because you know what I'm going to do? Scream and flail around, and then the shark is definitely going to come eat me, because it's like, this is food. This is a fish. This is a fish flailing around, and it's ready for me to enjoy my dinner.
Didn't you say you're doing like a snorkeling adventure?
Dude, so let me tell you, the amount of YouTube videos I've been watching and the amount of research I've put into this to try to figure out what sharks are in this vicinity of where I'm going to be snorkeling, how deep we're going to be going, if there's barracudas around there, like, I'm real scared, but they say to face your fears, so I'm doing it. I am going snorkeling.
Oh, good for you. It's really magical.
Ah, you
say that.
It really
is magical. Here's a tip. Don't wear any jewelry.
I'm not going to. No jewelry, nothing shiny, nothing. All the colors that I would normally wear, like neon, I'm not supposed to wear those.
Don't bleed. So I have kind of, don't bleed. Yeah. Bleeding's important.
Don't be on your period,
no,
which I can control for sure.
I meant open wounds. That's what I meant. But same idea. Yeah.
Use a tampon. But yeah, that's... And we're kayaking to get to the snorkeling. So I'm going to be tired by the time I even get there.
I'm sure they'll tow you.
Will they?
Yeah, it'll be like a movie kayak. Like 20 of them behind a boat. Just being pulled
along. No, they
said
you have to be able to paddle the whole time.
Uh-huh.
I just don't know how long it is.
I hope it's not far. You'll probably fall asleep.
So. Damn, that's true. But anyway.
I'm sure she fell off the boat. We would be able to find her pretty quick because all we'd have to follow is the trail of shit and piss that she'd be leaving behind her as she's drifting because she's so goddamn scared.
Yes. And the loud cries for help. That right. would definitely get to you guys.
Is that a seagull? No, it's Amanda. Is that a
seagull? So Amanda, why are you so terrified of water? Just because you can't see underneath it?
Actually, I'm a little more terrified when I can see underneath it.
Really?
But yeah, I'm just scared of everything that's in there. I don't like the fish that touch me because I've had fish like touch my feet and my legs. I'm obviously very scared of like sharks and jellyfish. I'm scared of something happening to me. There are so many options that the universe could choose from to end my life in those moments. Interesting. So I want to say I do think that Jaws, even though I didn't watch that movie like when it came out with the hysteria, it still is so terrifying for someone who watched it when they were younger and watched it as they were older too, because of the way it shapes your mind about what a shark attack would be like, even though none of that apparently statistically and like through science happens that way. But I still have it in my brain that a shark is going to pull me underwater, or it's going to bite through the boat and it's going to tip me over and it's going to eat me alive. So.
Okay. So.
Movies. Movies
she enjoys them because she's scared of it. Got it. John, what about uh-huh. you?
You know, I like the idea, the juxtaposition of these very tight places, these tight feeling areas, these tight shots that force you to focus on the character. And then whenever they show you the vast amount of sea that's out there, it suddenly feels huge. So it's kind of like, if they do it correctly, it's kind of like you're watching the screen breathe in front of you. And you get this rhythm about how they're telling the story. So that's the stuff that I like when it comes to TV shows and movies that take place overseas. But also there's all the mystery behind it all. What is out there? You know, what's under the water? We only know so much about what's going on out there. There could be a megalodon out there and we would never really know until it actually jumped out and, you know, bit your whole body in half.
Oh man, I hope Jason Statham's around so he can
right
kick it back.
Me too. Strong but for different legs. Reasons.
Hold me.
Hold me, Jason.
I'm so scared.
Oh, I'll go ahead and hold you, little darling. I don't know.
Ooh, I don't know what that was.
Why is he Matthew McConaughey?
I don't know.
It's a weird analogy. I like things that happen in the sea as long as there's things happening on the sea. You know what I mean? I don't like when they're just drifting. I don't like movies where they're just drifting. Open water is one where people are just out there drifting. That's not really a ship, but they're in open water. And it's an okay movie, but after a while, I'm like, all right, I need land. I need people walking around. I need something standing. So those isolated locations like that just get a little cumbersome for me. But I enjoy them. There's a lot of movies that have done that very well, like H-571 and things like The Hunt for Red October, those kinds of movies where they've made, Crimson Tide, it's another great one, where they've made it really about what happens in the boat, not so much what happens outside of it. And that right. is a fascinating endeavor. But I do agree, I get terrified when I can't see underneath the water. If I can see it, like I'm in the Caribbean, I'm not so worried about it. I'll probably see the shark as he bites me. So that's better.
I'll see it coming.
Yeah. I mean, so I'll know, I'm about to lose that leg. And honestly, I'm probably going to do it on my own at this point, the many injuries I've had. So I might as well get a robotic one. But when I can't see it, all I think about are things like the Meg. And I think everything is the Meg. I think a catfish is the Meg. Everything is the Meg to me. It's just a gigantic beast that wants to eat everything about me. And, you know, like, and apparently they're just hanging out in my general vicinity. It's terrifying.
Can we also talk about the fact that we're all just swimming around in someone else's fecal matter?
Stop.
Like, there is so much piss and shit that we're just wadding in. The other thing that nobody tells you about in these movies about the ocean is just how bad it's going to be if you get any of that water in your eye. And you can't rub your eye because your hands are wet, and then you get more salt in them. Sure. and it's not a good time, but everybody looks like they're just having a great time. Their hair looks beautiful. Their face is fine. Nobody has like redness all over. Blake Lively, I want to understand how you went looking that good with all of that water in your eyes.
Yeah, Blake Lively.
She's not human.
She is not. She is not human. She is not. The Shallows, that was a great movie. Mm-hmm. That was great.
You know, also, it is a nice combination just to be able to get pink eye. You know, it just like, here's a pink eye infection. Because now I'm stuck thinking about how you... Well, I'm stuck about thinking about how you were going on about the poop and the pee and all that stuff. And I'm like, all right, well, now I'm thinking about that because I never really did before, because I always figured the ocean has its own great filtering system for its own thing. There's always something out there to eat it. But what happens when it hasn't eaten it?
Not to mention the ocean has turned into a landfill, quite literally. So we're just swimming in a dumpster full of people's old garbage, animals that can pee and poo. And pee and poop. Yeah. So it's a really great time. Very romantic. There's crabs in the sand. Nobody told me about that in the movies.
That's why we have new boats and ships, so we can stay out of the water.
That's exactly why, Aaron. That is exactly why.
Oh my God. You're making me hate the ocean. Like, seriously.
I'm real sorry.
Seriously.
Yeah, is there anything else you can take the fun out of?
Seriously, even in the Navy, they didn't have this class in the Navy. We didn't have a discussion about all the poo and pee that was out there, and now I'm really focused on it. Now it's like a big thing.
Yeah. And you're a germaphobe, so
have
fun with that.
But I mean, I know the salt is what really kind of cleans it, so to speak. I mean, salt does, it's a natural cleaner to a degree. So that cleans,
I don't know,
a lot of
if
it.
I go to clean my house, I'm not using salt. I'm using vinegar.
Maybe that's
something.
What's in your disinfectant and your cleaning supplies. Maybe there's a lot of salt in it.
Maybe.
Or chlorine.
Sodium.
Don't you love the idea that we just, at some point, humans said, we really need to swim in water, but we need the water to be the same water every year, so we need to invent a chemical that will kill whatever grows in that water? Am I the only person
that don't know if you mean that or not.
I mean it. I'm serious. Like, somebody at one point invented chlorine, and it's basically that water just, it stays that water forever, and you just keep throwing chemicals in it to make it good water. Is it really good if it's just chemicals?
Yeah. Think about that.
Well, now I don't want to get a pool.
See? Don't go to the ocean. Don't go in a pool. Stay on land forever.
No, I love water. I'm a little mermaid.
There's another.
Obviously not if you're afraid to go in the ocean.
I'm a pool mermaid.
I'm a pool mermaid.
I'm a pool.
All right. Pool maid?
Close enough.
What was the most awe-inspiring entertainment moment on a ship or a boat, and the most terrifying? John, you go first.
You know, this is going to be low-hanging fruit, but the most awe-inspiring was being able to see the Titanic set sail for the first time, and it looked exactly like it looked to those people at that time. So you have that vastness, even though there's like that the Titanic as far as the size of it was then versus like the size of seafaring vessels today, it's tiny, but back then it was something that was amazing, and it felt that way to the people who are watching it. Now, as far as like the most terrifying, same movie. It's the Titanic going down, because it was unless you got onto one of the boats, inescapable disaster as far as what happened to those people. Oh, and
when you hear that guy,
sure,
go,
some
ping, where he's falling down, and he just goes,
oh,
ping.
Yeah.
Oh.
He right off the railing, just pinged himself right off the railing. It just, there's a lot of that whole scene that just is bothersome, as far as somebody who, I'm okay with the ocean, I enjoy the ocean, but if I know that I'm about to fall into a column of air, because that's what happens, you know, it's not necessarily the boat sinking, it's the fact that with all the bubbles that are coming up from the sinking boat, you just keep falling with it. You don't, it's not like you'll be in water, you'll just keep falling with it, because the air bubbles will start pushing you down.
You need to get away from the boat before it really sinks, like as fast as possible.
Right.
To get pulled down with it. Yeah. I would, since you started with and ended with Titanic, I'm going to piggyback, because my most awe-inspiring moment is the sinking, just because they captured every look and feel of that. I mean, it's like, what, an hour 45 minutes of just constant going through what everyone on that boat went through. And especially when you have that topside down view, that is just one of the, probably one of the best shots in film history. And it's just a fantastic representation. And then you're out there in the ocean with them. And of course, Rose doesn't share the fucking door, but yeah, that's a whole nother story of murder. That should be a true crime documentary, even though it's fake. Then for Terrifying, it's, I mean, it, I don't say it's low hanging fruit. It just, it affected me deeply. It's the Jaws when the boat is sinking and Jaws gets on the boat and is eating Quinn. Now, for whatever reason, that's the only part of the movie that really terrified me. Except, well, no, you know what? Yeah, well, that would be the it. But a close number two is where Jaws is the guy, his boat flips over in the marina or whatever. And then you see him trying to get back on the boat and then the Jaws is right under the water and snatches him. That was very close too. Those two scenes.
Yeah, I mean, both those scenes you're describing, one of them is this is a fish. It doesn't belong on this boat, and it feels like cheating that it's on the boat.
It did.
You know?
It very much did.
And then the other one you're describing is, okay, the guy's about to make it. The guy's about to make it. No, you didn't.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a beautiful shot, too. Just seeing the mouth wide open, and you know exactly what's happening, but you don't actually see it. You just can feel it in every nook and cranny of your body. Ugh. And the thing with Quinn, I don't know why it scared me so much. I think it was just because I assumed this guy was going to make it. You know, this is the war hero. This is the guy that's been through it all. He's seen it all. He made it through that horrible USS Indianapolis scenario. There's no way he goes down. And then, bam, he just gets bit in half. Just, ouch.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I'm going to pull from the same movies, but different scenes.
I think we know which movies win then.
For the Titanic, in terms of the most awe-inspiring moments, I guess, of the film, it's the interior that I find so fascinating because it's so intricate and unique and customized. Like, there's so much beauty inside the ship. And I remember specifically when Rose is standing on those steps, and her and Leo kind of have that moment of looking at each other. And I'm just thinking about how beautiful this set piece is and how incredible that experience on that ship must have been before things went bad. And the worst, most terrifying moment is when, is it Martin in Jaws? Is that his name? Brody, dude?
Yeah, Brody, yeah.
It's when he is, you can see the shark, and I think this is what you were talking about too. Is that right, Aaron? When the shark, you can see it underneath the water, you can just see the shadow approaching and it just gets him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's terrifying to me because I think, to your point earlier about being able to see through the murky water or in the Caribbean where it's more clear water, if you don't know what's coming for you, you have more terror. And especially as an audience member, we know what's coming for this person who has no idea, which is very different from someone who sees it and has time to plan to react. Like, that's just the scary part, is this thing could get you at any point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That's terrifying. And when it was going for Brody's kids and the...
it had intentions with vengeance.
No, I'm not the fourth one. Jesus Christ. or the third one, for that matter. Apparently, these Jaws sharks take this shit personal. God damn, ever since you blew up Grandma, we are pissed. No, I meant when they're in the marina and that's, you know, and he's slowly realizing that his kids are over there and he gets up and runs as the shark is coming that way, you know, toward them. I don't mean the personalized attacks. Just the random ones.
You want to know a fun fact that I found out since you brought up the Megalodon?
Oh, God.
This news just came out on May 31st. They found a Megalodon tooth necklace with the sunken Titanic. So that means that the Megalodon doesn't mean that they were there necessarily during Titanic, but someone had a necklace of their tooth, which means, I don't know, couldn't have been that long before. 150 years, even if we're being generous, feels like too soon.
I bet you Jason Statham has that same necklace.
I'm just saying that scan, that news came out about it. That's scary to me.
So any other like favorite moments, boats and ships on TV? I mean, the biggest one I can think of is, does this count as a boat and ship moment when Sam Jackson gets eaten by the shark in Deep Blue Sea? I mean, it's kind of a sub, right? No, not really.
No, I don't think that counts.
Okay, well, everything Johnny Depp does in Pirates of the Caribbean. How about that?
It totally makes the Caribbean and being pirates seem fun. A lot of fun. Yeah. You know?
We don't have scurvy. It's great.
I mean, his teeth aren't the greatest in the movie, but it does look like it's very cool to be a pirate, even though we all know that that was a bad idea.
And there's treasure, like you get to go on a scavenger hunt, like that sounds like a fun time.
There's romance. Right. Oh, these two very, very pretty people are going to be okay and be together.
Right.
Oh,
not a single one of them has a venereal disease. That's so cute.
Aaron, I know you saw 47 Meters Down. John, did you see that one? It was from
I did not see that one a handful of years ago.
There's a scene in that movie where it starts to pan down the whole 47 meters. Mm-hmm. And that moment terrified the shit out of me because I'm somebody who does not have that knowledge set of depth perception. And so for me, I'm like, I don't know how 47 meters down could be 3 inches for all I know. And when you see how shockingly deep it is, and then you see the darkness as everything, you go lower and lower and things get darker and darker. That was such an incredible shot that they had in there.
Wasn't that like half a football field?
Don't ask me. I don't know.
It feels a lot longer when it's an ocean, man.
Right. Well, you know, you start losing the ability to freely breathe. And yeah, I guess I get that totally. Yeah. You know, it's not a movie or a traditional TV show per se, but Deadliest Catch, for whatever reason, I really enjoyed watching that. You know, you got these guys in a reality show who are doing the whole ice fisherman thing up in Alaska, and that always felt pretty intense when it came to what they were doing, especially when they're trying to fish through a storm. I'm like, how are you guys even filming this crazy crap? The water is up above the boat. How is that not? How are you not crapping yourself? That's all I gotta say.
It's a good question. Yeah, that's a good moment too. I want to mention the African Queen. If you've never seen it, the Humphrey Bogart movie. It's probably one of the few Humphrey Bogart movies where he's smiling a lot. You know, he's not looking solemn.
He's drunk.
Yeah, he might be. Yeah, very much. Absolutely, I could see that. And I feel like classic movies don't really get mentioned enough. Lifeboat is one of the rare exceptions to people trapped on a boat where I enjoy that concept. Poseidon Adventure, if you want a big disaster movie on a boat. Das Boot, obviously, is a classic. Moby Dick. Under Ghost Siege. Ship. What'd you say?
Oh, yeah. I said Ghost Ship.
Ghost Ship, sure. Under Siege, you know. Cause
that's a good one.
Steven Seagal, that's when he was fun. Dead Calm, that's one that never gets talked about. That's a great movie. You remember Dead Calm? Anybody ever seen Dead Calm?
Hum me a few bars of that one.
Dead Calm is the one with Mr. Cruise's ex-wife. Does this help? Nicole Kidman? Sam Neill's on it?
Okay, yes. I know which one this is. Yes.
Okay. Because that was one where they're on a boat, and there's a tragedy that happens, and they're stuck at sea, and then there's a stranger that gets on the boat, and it's Billy Zane. So you know shit's going south, right? If you've seen Titanic, you just know what's going to
happen. Right, right.
But it's a great film, and more people should see that one, too.
Captain Ron?
God, Captain Ron!
Oh, you're welcome.
Kurt Russell. God bless you.
I recently rewatched that one, and it holds up.
I thought that was such a fun movie. Stupid, but fun.
Another one that makes me a little scared of the ocean is Deep Blue Sea. That's a fun one, though.
That's a fun movie, though. I have a hard time saying I was scared of anything. I mean, they ate Sam Jackson in the middle of a speech. That's good.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, my hand's like a shark fin, yo.
LL Cool J was pretty funny in that. What was this? What's this animal? Was that a monkey? What was it?
It was a parrot.
It's a parrot. That's right. I knew he had an animal, and I can't remember what the animal was.
Yeah, it was a parrot. A parrot that cursed at everything.
Yeah. That's funny. I mean, we could mention Waterworld, but why? Why? That movie's...
I actually kind of like that one.
You would. Of course you would.
I really kind of enjoy
it. A marvel of artistry in your world. Okay, guys. Well, you know what? We're going to leave you. I think we've talked about boats and ships as much as you'd like to hear, but we're going to leave you with a little taste of what you can get on Patreon. If you want to support us, please. It really does help the show and keeps us going. Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. This is Bad Movie Night, where I believe it's John and Troy and myself talk about Transformers. Troy is not a fan of that movie, and we really fight with him quite a bit on this. So enjoy.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, sorry. It's the tease, right? It's the tease. But we talk about that movie, and especially, why is Michael Bay obsessed with teenage girls? It's weird.
Oh my God, that's mm-hmm. also true.
It's a thing.
But you know, a lot of people love hearing Aaron and Troy spar.
That is true. That is incentivizing.
Well, there you go. We'll find out if that's true here in a minute. So here's a sample. You can find a ton of episodes. There are over like 60 or 70 episodes in Patreon now. I think actually we might be at 80 that are in there of Bad Movie Night. So there's a lot. That's a whole other podcast you can listen to if you want to, just by signing up at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Thanks, Amanda and John, for being here.
Thank you for having us.
He said, thanks, Amanda, because I don't show up enough. He was like, thanks for actually making your presence known.
I didn't say it, but you did, and that counts.
So, I knew what you were saying.
Thanks for, being on time.
Gracing us with your presence.
I wasn't exactly on time, but I did show up.
Oh, you weren't on time?
That's what he meant. Can we go? Let's let these people enjoy this. Come on, here you go. Here's some Transformers. Okay. Enjoy.
Are you gonna like start this one out with like?
No.
Da, 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 da.
This is Bad Movie Night, where we take a look at a movie critics or fans didn't care for, we think might actually be not such a bad movie. And for this particular month, we're talking about Transformers, which came out in 2007. It's an absolute gem. And just so you know, Transformers, as of right now, as of this recording, has a 58% critic score, but an 85% audience score, because everybody in the right mind knows this movie's awesome. Speaking of that, joining me for this, I'm Aaron Peterson. Also joining me today is John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Wonderful. And a guy who I think is the opposite of the way John and I probably feel, Troy Heinrichs.
I don't know if it's opposite, but this is definitely not a good movie.
Is this because you saw them as your, like you see the robots as kin, and it really bothers you that they're being chased by the government?
No, I feel really awful that they spent bazillions of dollars on the CGI effects and it looked like shit.
You were out of your fucking mind.
Yeah, for, what was it, 2007? Seven.
I just said it, yeah.
I can't, I don't listen to you.
The cartoon looked 10 times better than what this looked like.
It's a cartoon, it did not look 10 times better.
Don't ruin my childhood with this crap.
John, you're a visual artist. What do you say? How are the effects for 2007? I thought they were phenomenal.
I think for 2007, the effects on this are actually pretty phenomenal. Like, it's not until the later movies where they start getting really weird about the effects. But in this one, it was everything I could have asked for out of Transformers. When I was watching it again, 15 years later? I might have some issues with it, but it's been 15 years. So, okay.
It took like Prime a half an hour to transform.
It took everybody a half an hour to transform, you know? It never really made sense. Okay, now you're going to get me going. It never really made sense as to like, they transform sometimes and it's super slow and it takes like, can I come back? You want me to come back? Because it's like changing. Or like they need to fight and it's 2 seconds. Why doesn't it make sense? Why doesn't it like, it's either super fast or super slow and there's no in between on the whole transforming bit until they get to like, I'm going to transform halfway only because I need to be able to use a hand in card mode.
And the first time, like every time you see the first robot transform, it always takes longer.
Yes.
And I'm like, I get you're trying to make an introduction, but on the same token, at this point, if I'm any of these people, I would have ran screaming in terror.
I would have gotten away. I run slow, I would have been able to get away.
I would have stumbled away.
Yeah.
I would have slowly crept away.
I think Aaron would have tripped over 3 branches, broken an ankle, and still gotten away.
Definitely. It takes so long. Oh my God. It was an Optimus Prime. His took forever.
And it doesn't even turn into the classic Peterbilt flat cab. They use the alternative, which isn't really even Prime. It's like Prime's brother in the design.
I mean, Peterbilt's a much sweeter truck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't really complain about it. You can't use that one because it looks better. That truck looks better. It's a nicer truck. It's a nice Pete. It's sweet.
Yeah, but the Blue Flame concept was not Optimus Prime. It was like Prime's brother.
Oh, my God. This is like a nerd thing. So you two both watched the animated. I think I watched them, but I really play with the toys more. And I just thought it was cool that they made cars that could become robots. That was pretty
bitching. I still play with the toy. I have the Lego set in my hand that I just purchased. And you know what? It's not the 2007 version Optimus Prime. It is the original 1980s version Optimus Prime because it is the superior version of Optimus Prime.
So basically, you just have to have everything exactly like your childhood had it?
That was the whole point of releasing these movies, wasn't it? To get me to go to the theater, someone that enjoyed the original.
It did, didn't it?
I went to the first one, and I never saw the rest.
What? I can't really fault you there.
Yeah. So, they were super hit or miss after the first one.
It was like, Star Trek, where it's like every other one was good?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's pretty wild. Actually, I think I only liked three of them, of all of them. If I include Bumblebee. The other ones I tolerated.
Which basically Bumblebee doesn't count.
Yeah, it doesn't. But that's a really sweet movie. Like Bumblebee is a really good movie.
Oh, no, it's the best of any Transformer movie ever made.
I saw Bumblebee because Bumblebee is awesome.
Yeah, Bumblebee is the best one ever made. It's just a different universe from the one we're accustomed to.
I think this is a good movie, though. Like, I legitimately think this is a good film. I'm sorry. You didn't get a fucking stripe or whatever the hell you were looking for on the side of your truck. But I still felt like this is a good movie. Aside from Michael Bay's very, very uncomfortable nature of making it sexual to be around teenage girls. He's got a thing with that that's really kind of weird. And I don't get it. I mean, I get it. I got it when I was 14. I don't get it.
You weren't even 14 when this movie came out.
No, I'm saying when I was 14, I understood why he would film these things. But now as a grown-ass man with kids, I'm like, Michael Bay, you're kind of a pervy director. You're a little bit of a perv director. I mean, he's got John Turturro basically, I don't know, talking trying to be sexy to Megan Fox, who's supposed to be a teenage girl. He's like, she's a rebel. She's hot. Rebels are hot or whatever. I'm like, you're like a 45-year-old man, and you've got this teenage girl in the back of your car. That's fucking weird. That's just weird in context.
Yeah, it's – well, you know, training bra. There's only two types of women. There's the super sexy woman, or there's a comic relief woman in Michael Bay movies. There's no in-between.
Whenever you see a Michael Bay movie, as soon as you leave the theater, you have to go to IMDb and check the actress's age to make sure that she was legal when you saw whatever scene she was in.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's a pervy director.
Yeah, here's a hint. Megan Fox wasn't legal when this was filmed.
She was, too. She was 20 years old.
No, she wasn't. She was 17.
When was it filmed? Because she was born in 86.
It was filmed,
I assume, in 2006, because it came out in 2007. That's 20. I don't know where math works in your world. But
hold on one second, because I remember her being much younger.
It would have been 2 years prior, probably, because of CGI.
She was 20.
So she was probably like 20. She was probably 19, but she was definitely of age.
I stand corrected. She was 20.
Yeah, I know. I understand how math works. I'm glad you're coming around, though. Next, we'll work on calculus. I'm not very good at that one, though. So,
yeah, neither is Michael Bay, because I don't understand how a giant freaking cube gets transformed into a small little sugar cube to put in a pocket.
Well, it wasn't a small little sugar cube, but I get your point.
Yeah, I concede your point. It was pretty neat. But back to the perviness. And then you go to the other movies, and every successive movie, there's like a young girl where she's a little too sexy and supposed to be very, very young. And then Mark Wahlberg is like dealing with some 20-year-old dating a 16-year-old. I don't remember. Like, it's just a lot of creepy stuff that I don't understand why he's so obsessed with. But anyway, here's a description of what this movie's about, if you care. The fate of humanity is at stake when two races of robots, the good Autobots and the villainous Decepticons, bring their war to Earth in search of and in defense of the Allspark. The robots have the ability to change into different mechanical objects as they seek the key to ultimate power. Like I said, the Allspark. Only human teen, Sam Witwicky, played by Shia LaBeouf, can save the world from total destruction, as well as Michaela, his soon-to-be girlfriend, played by Megan Fox, and a bunch of other people. Bernie Mac shows up, John Turturro, Anthony Anderson, back when all he did was Scream. That was his job title, I think, in every movie he was in back then. come in, scream a lot, leave.
So,
I can't believe that I'm here right now.
You can duck down if you want. I mean, it won't hurt my feelings.
No. I didn't mean here with you. I just meant here, like, in this situation.
Oh.
Same situation that I'm always in, because, I don't know, I guess I just have a weakness for hot guys, for tight abs and really big arms.
Big arms? Well, there's a couple new additions in the car. Like, I just put in that light there. And that disco ball. So the light reflects off the disco ball. Yeah.
Are you new to school this year? It's your first year?
No. We've been in the same school since first grade.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, a long time.
Well, do you have any classes together?
Yeah. Really? History, language arts, math, science.
Sam,
yeah.
Sam Wilkicky.
Wiki.
God, yeah. You know what? I'm so sorry. I just...
No, it's cool.
I just didn't recognize you.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's understandable. No. Come on. Sorry, just working out the kinks, you know, it's a new car. Oh.
So this radio is like, you know, it's old radio too, so...
Look, this isn't something, you know...
You want some trivia on Transformers?
Always. Only always.
According to Megan Fox, she was attending a Linkin Park concert, and when it was over, the band met her personally and stated that they heard about the live-action Transformers movie and requested whether they could have a song of theirs in the film, and thus What I've Done appears in the closing credits, which I think is awesome. It's an awesome song.
Agreed.
I mean, it's weird that it's played while the Transformers are all standing around looking kind of patriotic while Sam and Michaela are getting it on Bumblebee's hood. That part's weird. It's basically like just a group watch is really kind of how that is. I'm back to pervy again, just in case you missed that.
You're really right back to pervy again. They're getting all voyeur-like.
Just letting you know. Those two are basically humping up Bumblebee. The camera pans back. All these other cars are just sitting there with all their headlights facing that car. And then you got Optimus Prime doing his monologue, looking patriotically into the sun.
And as the movie showed, like the Autobots can have essentially bodily fluids they can release at will.
Oh, yeah. Autobots roll out. All right. So Peter Cullen, the original voice of Optimus Prime, described reprising the role as slipping into an old pair of very comfortable shoes that you haven't worn in for a while, and was grateful to the fans for wanting and bringing him back. Because I believe, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, that originally they weren't going to go with him, and then kind of like it was like a Sonic effect where the fans kind of demanded that he return.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that if he wasn't Optimus Prime, there would have been a riot.
Yeah, it's like having James Earl Jones be Darth Vader, even in Obi-Wan Kenobi just recently.
Yeah, at some point, if they're going to keep using Vader, they're going to have to move on, though, because Jones ain't going to live forever.
Oh, now you can just deepfake it pretty easily.
Yeah, they basically, in Coming to America 2, they basically held him up with sticks, didn't they?
Stop. For the scene where Scorponok...
I met him, by the way.
Who? Scorponok?
No, that would be kind of freaky.
That's not real.
That's not a real Transformer either.
Okay. It's in the movie. It's real. It counts. Like, just because it wasn't there when you were a kid, they can come up with new ones.
When I was a kid, it doesn't work. No, I met Peter.
Oh, my God.
At a comic convention. No, Peter Cullen.
Oh, Peter Cullen. What's he like when you see his face with the voice?
He's actually really cool. He actually talked to us for probably a good half hour, just, you know, reliving the days. And he actually does the Optimus voice. And it's like, oh, my, like, we hear it on the spot. It was pretty crazy. So there's actually, I have to find it. I think we had a picture of him standing next to a giant Optimus Prime outside the convention center. It was pretty cool.
Did you tell him that you didn't like this movie?
No.
And I think like Scorponok is actually a real Transformer from Beast Wars.
Oh, nerd fight. Go ahead.
I'm looking for things like Soundwave and Omegatrain and Rumble.
So he didn't remember, John. That's what I'm hearing.
You mean Astrotrain?
It's a real nerd fight. Go ahead.
See, the difference is
how wrong you are.
Is that he's looking it up. I'm just sitting there looking at the screen.
He's, damn it, I'm wrong. Oh, I can't admit that. Let's move on. What I really wanted was Shockwave. Anyway, for the scene where Scorponok bursts
sound wave.
I don't care though. Bursts sand right on the heels of the soldiers. The effect was achieved by detonating a primer cord under the sand. The explosions would be in close proximity and very dangerous to the actors in the scene. So before the scene was shot, Michael Bay told the actors to run and keep running no matter what happens, or else they could be seriously injured or even worse, killed. As a result, the look of panic on the actors' faces is 100% genuine. That feels like a Michael Bay thing.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing. You know, at that time, all those actors, well, I mean, even now, most of those actors, but even at that time, all those actors were so cheap that, Josh DeMille, he's replaceable.
It's not like we took Fergie. We took the cheap one in that relationship.
Right.
To keep the film realistic and under budget, the U.S. Department of Defense provided their support towards the film's production, the largest project they have assisted since Black Hawk Down at the time. The military provided their vehicles as the alternate modes of the Decepticon, Starscream, and Bonecrusher. They also allowed their F-22 and CV-22 aircraft to be filmed, the first time those planes had been seen in a feature film since Hulk in 2003 at the time. Soldiers served as extras, and authentic uniforms were provided for the actors, and in return for the favor, the filmmakers provided an advanced screening of the film to the soldiers free of charge.
That's pretty cool. Nice.
I mean, at this time, Michael Bay was really, really known for just respecting the hell out of the military. I mean, whenever he filmed them like where you'd almost want to stand up and salute, you know, Pearl Harbor, even Pearl Harbor, if you don't like the movie, but the actual military scenes were fantastic. The Rock, anything where there was any kind of military involved or government involved, he really very patriotic.
Well, now that I know that Megan Fox was 20 when this was filmed, I'm pretty sure I stood up and saluted her.
Well, I'm glad he respected the military, because he didn't respect Starscream, because the alternate form of Starscream is stupid.
You sure you got his name right?
Yes.
Yeah, he got it right. He's looking it up right now.
The Decepticons, I'm gonna have a heart attack. The Decepticons were to have more dialogue in the film, but most of their lines were cut out to keep them mysterious. Screenwriter Roberto Orci reasoned that the more a villain talks, the less threatening they are. To please the fans, though, Megatron's classic berating of Starscream, "You fail me yet again, Starscream," was put in the film.
Yeah, that was like I thought that was one of the dumbest things they could have added to the film, because, you know, Megatron just woke up from being frozen for a millennia. And and the very first words out of his mouth to his underling, who's like been looking for him for a millennia, was, "Dude, you fucked up." And that was pretty shitty.
It feels like that kind of, you know, abusive dad.
You missed the part where they were so silent that as the Decepticons are starting to appear, they have to show you the Decepticon language and then change it into the actual name of Decepticon, because they can't just say the name. It was dumb.
That's a little fair.
The Transformers possess such a rich level of detail and complexity, it took the ILM animators 38 hours to fill them in a single frame of the film, proving that's some complex work, dude. It's a lot of work. And it looked great to two out of the three of us.
Sometimes complexity is actually bad. And they just simplify.
Two out of three
simplify,
of us.
Simplify.
Captain Buzzkill. Is that your Transformer name? Buzzkill?
Bonesaw is ready! So one of the things I was appreciating as I was watching this was just how layered each robot was. Like, you know, whenever they moved, there was not only the front layer, but underneath you can see a whole lot of things moving around to give it that life. The one part where it drove me a little bit nuts was like around their mouths, which again, one thing that just drive me nuts about this is Optimus Prime's gorilla lips. Like, I don't know why he had to have those, but okay. Just give him face shield the whole time. That would have been perfect. That would have been more Optimus Prime. But anyhow,
that's exactly what I was saying. Sometimes the complexity is simpler is better.
On that one little thing.
Dude, right. Optimus Prime's face shield versus whatever lip movement mouth thing that they had is just about as bad as the caterpillar on Henry Cavill.
I saw this movie with a ton of Transformers fans. Everybody loved this design. I don't know why you hate it so much. I really don't. I'm trying to be fair, too. I don't get why you don't like it. I think it looks cool. I mean, granted, it's 15 years old, so there's newer stuff that looks cooler. It's not, but you're talking like it's Scorpion King. Like, The Rock showed up as Optimus Prime.
I'm just, it wasn't Optimus Prime for me.
He really wanted that stripe or whatever the hell it was. Fire. Was it fire? Or you wanted the flame gone? What was it?
It just wasn't enough red. It's a red cab.
I get what you're saying about the old school front flat face, Peterbilt, whatever it was. You know, all those words you used. I like this design because...
It's a cab over.
Okay. I like this design a bit more because as this design transforms out, it will naturally be a bigger robot versus the cab over. The cab over won't be as big of a robot.
Technically speaking, the cab over was supposed to be 30 meters tall, and the one that they actually have was actually 27 meters tall. That's why they went with the cab over in the cartoon to make it look taller.
20 feet. One was 32 feet and one was 20 feet. I have that as trivia.
Ah.
There you go.
Wait, which one was taller than Aaron?
The larger Peterbilt truck was chosen to make Prime taller because the test design showed that a cab over can only disguise a 20-foot robot. So the larger Peterbilt could disguise a 32-foot robot. That's the impression, which is weird. This will actually agree with Troy. I don't know why the hell that matters because you just had a box that was 6,000 feet tall and it, you know, eventually got into a guy's pocket. So maybe we're overthinking this, ILM. I don't know.
Somebody's overthinking it.
Somebody. Lastly, Michael Bay originally wanted an Apple iPod for Simmons' demonstration in the AllSpark chamber, but Apple CEO Steve Jobs objected to the use of one of his products and a Nokia cell phone was used instead. Either way, it would have looked like garbage 15 years later.
That's because the AllSpark branded a Decepticon instead of an Autobot. If it was an Autobot, Steve might have thought, hey, you know what? It's a good guy.
Is that why? That's really what you think it is?
Sure.
Just make it up facts as you go.
Yeah.
All right. So you two are a fan of the animated series, obviously. So how does this compare overall for you as fans?
For me, I think that it didn't do enough of connecting the Autobots with the humans. Like there's a reason why the cartoon series worked, and it was because of the dad and his son working together with Optimus Prime and the Autobots, and it gave it the heart that it needed for the show. And I think that in here, it's just the Autobots were very much like, we just need the glasses. Give me the glasses. Where's the game glasses? Come on, hurry up. Give me the glasses. There's like no human connection. I think there was even a line in there at one point, like, why do we even need the humans? And I think that just takes away from what the original concept was that these Autobots and Decepticons were stuck on Earth in the cartoon series, and they needed enough energy to get back to Cybertron. So they had to figure out a way to coexist and make sure that they didn't actually do damage to the Earth. And I think that was missed in this whole concept of if this AllSpark was this life-giving energy creation, you know, thing that basically creates the universe, like there should have been more connection in that and how we actually would work to save the planet rather than destroy the planet, because there's just destruction, which is obviously Michael Bay's calling card.
At the time when this was released, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it because I was able to get essentially Rock'em Sock'em Robots on the screen, and it was just a lot of fun. And I, you know, at the time, I really just wanted to be able to have fun, enjoy looking at my Transformers and seeing what Michael Bay was doing. As a more evolved or ancient human being now, and I rewatch this, I find myself like thinking, you know what? They had it right when they did Bumblebee, because they went so much smaller with Bumblebee and they focused on one character. And I want to, you know, one character having a bond with a human that takes him through his adventure. You know, I do want to see something more like that instead of these overwhelming epics that the Transformer movies were, where you had to follow 15 different robots, 2 different people, you know, somebody, some girl and running around practically in her panties for some reason that doesn't make any sense, you know, all these different things. Whereas something smaller, a little bit more evolved, a little bit more appreciative of the heart and story would be nicer. However, at the time when this came out, I really did like it and it was a lot of fun.
Okay, then. I watched the series, but again, it was just the toys. I was really excited that my toys were a movie and it looked really cool and I had a ton of nostalgia and it was fun. So I had a lot of fun. And I had fun with, you know, seeing the success of movies, even if I didn't like them. The second one, I absolutely hated, thought it was just freaking horrible, and still had a good time going to the theater to see it because, you know, you went with a group of people that love Transformers. And then Mark Wahlberg showed up and it started getting weird. So
it was like 3 down the road before, actually, it was like the 4th one Mark Wahlberg shows up in, didn't it?
Yeah, it was fourth and fifth is when Wahlberg was there.
Yeah.
Now, just as a movie, if you can, Troy, take the nostalgia factor out of it. Does this first one work as a movie, especially when you look back on it 15 years later?
I mean, it's got the parts, right? Thing lands on Earth, people come to Earth, people fight over thing on Earth, military gets involved, humans save the day, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, the story tracks from that perspective, but the dialogue is just all over the place. I mean, it's almost like watching it on 2x speed sometimes, and I felt like the scenes going from scene to scene were really choppy, plus the really creepy scene when they're in the back of the government car that we were talking about a little bit earlier. I didn't feel the dialogue of the Autobots was especially crisp compared to like what you've seen before from like the cartoon. And then the fact that the Decepticons didn't talk at all, and just they actually them not talking made them less menacing and less evil, in my opinion. And I really disliked the little creepy, tiny, scaly spider robot that is running around the entire movie, trying to like break into things and hack into things and fall down Hoover Dam and still be able to walk afterwards. Like that thing was just annoying on the screen the entire time it was there. So from that perspective, it's just, I mean, it's a fun, like, go eat your popcorn, throw your brain away at the door kind of movie, but at the end, it's not really well put together, to be honest.
What about you, Jen, if you take your nostalgia out of it?
Well, I mean, I think I answered it a little prematurely in the last question, but when I take my nostalgia out of it, I find that there are some problems with the dialogue. I don't like how cringy some of the parts are. As I mentioned before, if you're a woman in one of these movies, you're either a sex symbol or you're the butt of a joke. You know, there's no in between on those things. And yet, nearly every single guy has their moment of being awesome. The Wickwicky dad has his moment of being cool. Sam has 15 other different moments of like being able to be quippy and hysterical, and or just say whatever kind of crazy nonsense that Shia LaBeouf can throw out in like 2 seconds. And then you've got everybody else beyond that. Even what's his face?
Him.
Angelina Jolie's dad. John Voight. Even John Voight.
Not even a recognizable actor anymore to you. He's like, oh, that's Angelina Jolie's dad.
He had some really good moments. And, you know, but yet if you're Sam's mom, like, you're the butt of a joke. If you're any other woman, you're just there as a hood ornament. So, I mean, those sorts of things kind of bother me. But I think, I'm pretty sure, at least from the stuff that I've seen recently from Michael Bay, he's grown out of that unnecessary sex symbol thing about him from the 90s that he kept for way too long. So
yeah, the female cryptographer is actually probably one of the better characters in the entire movie, because she actually sounds intelligent, understands what's going on, actually gives a little bit more heart to the story, if you will. And then she's
and it has to be sexy as hell. Has to be sexy as hell.
I mean, yeah. Granted, she wasn't bad to look at, but she at least seemed like she actually could act and deliver lines and actually fit into where she was actually fitting into the story.
I wasn't Megan Fox listening did to a word she said.
Shit. I think Megan Fox did a great job. It's just like, why do they have to be sex symbols? It's just a Michael Bay thing, and it's just kind of weird. The whole scene where they're in the bedroom, it's Sam's private time, and are you up here jerking off? Are you up here masturbating? What a weird scene when you know this is going to be like a family movie. I mean, you know, Transformers feels like a family movie. So even if you're trying to adult it up a little bit and get it a little edgier, that's still, it's such a completely unnecessary. And I think he was going for, oh, this would be really funny. And it's kind of funny, but man, it's really cringy. It's just, it's really cringy.
There was a lot of those like, oh, make this awkward so that the cool, you know, the cool guy that doesn't ever get the girl, you know, is just that much harder to get the girl. There was a lot of that, and it was really not well done.
Oh, there's a ton of it. Like, whoa, why don't you come up here and sit on my lap because we share a seatbelt.
That line was actually, I thought, pretty good.
So ridiculous. At least she acknowledged it. Well, that's a pretty good line. I'm like, all right, as long as she's in on how ridiculous it is, I can go with this. I can roll. So do you think, and I got to say, I didn't have a nostalgia factor except when I first saw it. I was just really excited to see a Transformers movie, and I thought they did a really good job. Did we really need a human cast? In terms of, do we need people in this?
Well,
would you guys rather have like an all Transformers movie?
Well, it depends on which version of Transformers you're doing, right? If you're doing War on Cybertron, then yeah, you don't need a human cast. But if you're doing anything on Earth, you have to have the human cast. Because
that's what I'm asking. Point. Would you be able to enjoy a movie where it was just 100% special effects, where it's Transformers against Transformers?
Yeah, the War on Cybertron was a great, great bit of story. Like, that'd be great to see in this kind of, if they use the models from that movie, that story the way they're supposed to be used, and not the alternate versions because it was easier or taller or because it had flames on the side of the truck. Stupid.
I think you gotta let that go.
I don't know. I'm trying to think it out, and I think there has to be a human component to it, because the human component ends up being is the person that sells us on having the heart, and sells us on having the love for these characters the way we want to have that love for the characters. That's one of the reasons why Bumblebee works so well, because they had that human component that that really tied it in and made it very sweet and enjoyable. I don't think. Like, I tried watching the War on Cybertron cartoon that just came out on Netflix a couple of years ago, and I didn't connect with it nearly as much as I did, like, watching the live action with people, or even watching the cartoon, the old school cartoon. So, I think people are, having people is necessary, but like, it's like Godzilla. Godzilla, you have to have the right amount of people. Not too much people. You gotta let the people be your vehicle through the story, but they can't be the story.
Right. Right. I get that. I will say, man, I really think Shia LaBeouf did a great job here. And, you know, I know wherever he's at in Hollywood at any given moment, it seems like he comes and goes and people can't decide what to do with him. But here, this is back when he was the best he ever was, as far as I was concerned. I thought he was really phenomenal as an actor at this time. I mean, he just had a really natural chemistry with everyone on screen. He was instantly relatable. He felt like the kind of kid you would, the kind of guy you'd want to know, you know, or that you would hang out with, you know, and just honestly really always felt genuine in these movies. He was just a very, very talented actor. So, you know, having him in there, I think, was excellent casting, because they could have went with some musclehead, or they could have went with somebody that was super popular, but they went with Shia LaBeouf, and I think he did a great job in this.
I agree with that totally, wholeheartedly. Like, he makes what these movies kind of fun. And even the relationship he has with his parents is so sweet and
fun.
It
is very sweet. Yeah.
And, you know, the relationship he develops with everyone except for his friend. What was his friend's name? Tyler was a get out of the tree, Tyler. Get out of the tree. Get out of the tree. And then he leaves him on the side of the road for Michaela.
He's got a lot of good moments in there. And I like seeing Bernie Mac, even though I'm still mad nobody cares that this Transformer blew out all their windows. I mean, he basically destroyed his business in one day. So while we're all going, oh, that was cool, I'm just like, man, you just ruined that guy's entire business. So thank God he got that $4,000 to replace all of those windshields.
Which is not enough.
Nope. 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 Man.
Not even in 2007 money.
And apparently nobody needs paperwork to sell this car. This is, I guess, back in the old days, you could just sell a car that was on your lot because it was there. Don't accidentally park your car in a car lot, because apparently Bernie Mac could sell it.
That totally checks out.
What's the cost of insurance on a Transformer, you think?
Is that before or after it gets the paint job in the tunnel?
That's a good question. That was a sweet ass. Was it a Camaro? Is that what it was?
Yeah, totally a Camaro. That, yeah, you know, I got to admit, Transformers is what reignited my love for Camaros. You know, I had forgotten how much I loved Camaros growing up, and then to see this new Camaro with Transformers come out, I was so obsessed with Camaros. My wife, the year this came out, she rented for my birthday. She rented me the brand new Camaro to drive around for my birthday. Mm. And it was a pretty fun day. So yeah, I love that car.
Did it sound like that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was badass. And I loved every little bit about driving that car. I would never own one today, but you know, they could have got me.
All right. So what makes this movie notable? Why do people still enjoy it that aren't Troy? Positives. What do you like about this? I can tell you, I thought it moves at a clip. It never felt slow. The pacing was good. There's always something moving and going on, even if I think the plot is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. So I think pacing wise, it's beautifully shot.
Yeah, the cinematography is also is always something that you can enjoy with Michael Bay. Like, he's always finding new and interesting ways of shooting things to make it more impactful and more of a, like, you know, you can take movie scenes out of his movies and turn them into wall paintings and things, and you'll be just fine as far as decoration goes in your house. You know, there's a lot of that has something good for it. The Autobots, they did choose for the story. They chose all the starter Autobots. You know, you had Ironhide.
Starter bots.
Yeah, it's like a starter pack. Yeah.
I mean, this, you had Ironhide, Bumblebee, Ratchet, Jazz, and Optimus Prime. Those five were the first five that you spent most of the time with in the cartoon. So it made the most sense. Why they had to, like, make up fake Decepticons for this whole thing, I don't know. But, you know, I can't expect them to get everything right.
That's my exact issue, was that you got the Decepticons. Like, Megatron doesn't even look like Megatron. Starscream used the alternate form, which looks stupid. And the fact that you never had Soundwave and you had some other thing becoming a boombox was just, like, sacrilegious, to my opinion.
Well, Soundwave shows up in the second one, I think.
Yeah, I think it was the second one.
Is it the second one. or third one? It's one of those two for sure. He shows up with, and he's actually a satellite in one of those two. And you actually get Shockwave also. You get Shockwave in the third one, I think it is. And Megatron looked more like Galvatron than he did Megatron, which is even in the way that he used his weapons, that was more Galvatron than anything else. And so, I mean, all that is a little bit frustrating, but at the same time, it's easier to do this versus, you know, a giant 30-foot tall robot turning into a handgun. That didn't make any sense. So you can't do that. Yeah. So you're going to have to do something a little bit different. So Galvatron would have made more sense. Or there's now in the newer cartoons where Megatron turns into a tank.
I mean, it couldn't have reduced down in size to a handgun. I mean, they reduced a giant cube into a sugar cube. So, I mean, the Allspark has the ability to reduce the size of stuff.
There's only so much that people were willing to accept. So they can accept a cube going into something that small. They can't accept a 30-foot tall robot turning into bite size.
I don't know. I mean, the movie is fun. I mean, that's what makes it notable. It's definitely fun. I love the way that the Autobots completely destroy the yard, because they saw the step on the fountain, the tear up the grass,
all over the place,
all that good stuff. I mean, there's definitely some, like, good one-liners in this, and of course Megan Fox is easy on the eyes. Yeah, so there's that.
Troy, do you still have that Lego Optimus Prime?
I do.
Next to you? Can you hold it up in front of the camera? I know it's a podcast, but, you know, we'll describe it. Can you hold it up in front of the camera? Can you point where on that Lego the doll hurt you?
Is it in the butt?
Are you Samuel James Witwicky, descendant of Archibald Witwicky?
Yeah.
My name is Optimus Prime. We are autonomous robotic organisms from the planet Cybertron. But you can call us Autobots for short.
Autobots?
Let's crack a little, bitches. My first lieutenant. Designation Jazz.
This looks like a cool place to kick it.
What is that? How do you learn to talk like that?
We've learned Earth's languages through the World Wide Web. My weapons specialist, Ironhide.
You feeling lucky, punk?
Easy, Ironhide.
Just kidding. I just wanted to show him my cannons.
Our medical officer, Ratchet.
The boy's pheromone levels suggest he wants to mate with the female.
You already know your guardian, Bumblebee.
Bumblebee.
Check on the rep.
Right?
Yep, second and none.
So you're my guardian, huh?
His vocal processors were damaged in battle. I'm still working on them.
Why are you here?
We are here looking for the Allspark. And we must find it before Megatron.
All right, what doesn't work about the movie? We already talked about the special effects, so what doesn't work? I'll tell you what I think doesn't work, and that is the plot. The Allspark it's a MacGuffin. Okay, that happens. But just everything that has to do with the plot, the freaking glasses are such a stupid plot.
It's a national treasure throw.
It kind of, I guess, but it's just dumb. It's like, it's illogical, completely illogical. And I'm saying for a Transformers movie, the plot is illogical. It's hard for me to swallow any of the plot. John Turturro is good, but he's also, I feel like he's in a different movie. I feel like he's not even in the movie he's in.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely different movie.
It's like, do you think you're in a Coen Brothers movie right now? Because that's how I feel like you think you are. And yeah, so that's what I think doesn't work. As much as I like Turturro, I think his character doesn't really work. It's way too goofy and off for this movie. And the plot is idiotic.
I think the plot suffers from the concept of they were trying to plan ahead for a trilogy or quadrily or whatever you want to call it.
Infinite.
Yeah. So I think that was rather than focusing on what worked originally, which was they came to Earth and they needed energy in order to get back home, which, you know, when you think about, you know, Hollywood always wanting to send a message, there could have been very easily a way that you could have tied into, you know, the oil reserves and, you know, why oil is such a bad thing. And that's what drew these alien robots here in the first place was our oil. And if we could switch to natural gas or wind power, we wouldn't have this problem. And, you know, there could have been just a lot better story tie-ins that you could have done, global warming issues, things of that nature. All could have been better stories than the AllSpark, a giant cube that basically gave life to the universe.
Yeah, I mean, now that you mentioned it, they could have done something along the lines of like Megatron's been on the planet and he's part of this shadow conspiracy to just milk the planet for as much energy as it possibly can. So you've got factories that are working overtime and power plants working overtime, and every single fossil fuel in the world is just being burnt to shit. And it's only because like the Decepticons find it faster to be able to pull energy from that versus being able to pull from more you know, whatever the reason is, like, you know, more sustainable energy sources. So, and it's just because they want to be able to collect energy to go back to Cybertron. They could have done any number of things that would have made for a little bit more of an interesting story, but this is Michael Bay. He doesn't want interesting. He just wants to be able to flash some tit and just have robots beat the crap out of each other. I think Aaron's making a note of that.
Hey, I'm making a note of that. Making an absolute note of that. All right. So where do you stand on this whole series as a whole? I mean, just if you look past the first movie, when you look at it as a whole, where do you stand in this series? What I found funny is Steven Spielberg once told Michael Bay that he made a mistake by doing so many of these that it actually hurt his career. And I think he's right. I 100% think he's right, because if he would have left after three movies, I feel like people would still be synonymous with excitement over the Michael Bay name. And now I don't think there's that. When he has a movie come out, it's just another director. He kind of blew his moment.
And I would agree with that. I'm agreeing with that, because there's not a lot that's going to get me to watch a Michael Bay movie. However, he did do like the Six Underground for Netflix specifically. And though the story isn't the best there, it's a fun and great movie. And then he did just recently, he did Ambulance. Mm-hmm. And Ambulance, is kind of like a Michael Bay showing his how much he's matured since he kind of disappeared for a little while, because, you know, you do have one of the more attractive women in Hollywood in that movie, and there's no excuse to show her bent over something in a thong, and there's no excuse to, like, you know, take her shirt off for any reason. She's right. Just there to do her job and to be who she is, and that's it. Like, there's no, like, he's just letting her be beautiful because she's beautiful. He's not trying to heighten that experience in any way. And then the way he used newer techniques of capturing motion by using a lot of drone footage. I know exactly who the pilot for the drone was who shot all of those. His name's drone pilots all have their, especially for FPV, have all their little pirate nicknames they call themselves. And that pilot his name is Captain Vanover. And, you know, he was.
Is that because he flies over ambulance vans?
No. So his, but like, I thought it was very cool seeing the way that they were using that technique of of capturing footage. So I like seeing that that this new side of Michael Bay. But again, it's not I didn't watch it because I didn't run to the theater to watch it because I'm like, oh, I need to go see a Michael Bay movie. I just waited until it was available and I watched it for free. So
Yeah, I think probably the problem with these movies is that it's kind of like the prequel movies for Star Wars, in that it was heavily relied on CGI. It was done at a time where maybe the CGI wasn't quite ready for it yet at that point in time, where practical effects would have been better as much as possible. So I think from that perspective, it suffers because it's just not as crisp and clean as it could have been if you would have done it, say, now. I think that's partly the reason why, like, when you think like all the remake stuff that's been going on, right? Your Ghostbusters is coming back and pulling back from the 1980s and pulling all that stuff forward. There's a reason why a live action Thundercats hasn't happened yet. I think a live action Thundercats would be amazing.
Gotta say ho every time somebody says Thundercats. It's just the way it goes.
And then you just realize that there were a bunch of cats running around chasing a red dot when the call sign went up in the sky. But I think that would be, if you were to try to do Thundercats in like the early aughts versus doing Thundercats now, then you actually be better off. You know, when you have things like Avatar coming out again, in Christmas, you'd have a much better chance of a Thundercats movie being successful today because they don't have assholes added into them later on.
As far as the way I stand on the series as a whole, going back to answering your actual question, the thing about the series as a whole, as you mentioned it before, it's very much that Star Trek effect where the first one's good, the next one's not that great, the one after that, all right, that was pretty good, the one after that, it's not at all great, and then the one after that, we might enjoy it, and then the one after that, burn it with fire, it must die.
I think if I'm following your numbers, actually that fire one was Bumblebee, and that was a good movie. So
no, the fire one was the one with the English robot and the hot rod. That spoke with Hot Rod, that spoke with a French accent, and not even like a cool French like accent, but more like Gerard Depardieu kind of French accent, you know,
which feels like a Michael Bay kind of accent, right? It's curvy,
right? Yeah. I don't know why Hot Rod had to sound like a moron. I'm not saying that French people sound like morons, but trust me, Hot Rod sounded like a moron.
I like the series.
Made five of these?
No, they made five of these plus Bumblebee. They made six of these.
Yeah, and then the sixth one, you know, Bumblebee was fantastic.
It was really good. It was the most Amblin of them, where it reminded you of like Amblin movies from the 80s, I think is
oh, and then there's the new movie that's coming next year.
Yeah, there's a new one coming. Yep. There's a new one coming.
Wait, what?
Rise of the Beasts?
Yeah, there's another.
If Rise of the Beasts is going to be all about like the Dinobots and stuff, like I'm
no, it's going to be Beast Wars.
Oh, is it going to be Beast Wars?
That's the only reason why they would use Rise of the Beasts. Does Michael Bay have anything to do with it?
No, he's out.
Okay.
He's out.
I'm kind of excited.
All right. Well, when we're talking about a bad movie, it's easy to trash it. So many podcasts that focus on bad movies love to mockingly throw out 5-star reviews. So we always want to turn it into a positive. So take everything you did like about this movie and give us your tailored 5-star review. Troy, this is going to be hardest for you, so go ahead.
Aerodynamic curves for days can get you going from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds flat. There's definitely more than meets the eye, as this movie will transform the way you feel about Megan Fox, 5 stars.
Sam's private time.
Apparently Troy's private time with that doll.
Apparently. How many times did you check this movie for car repair tips? Huh?
How many times did you check your own oil there, Troy?
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
I wear my seatbelt all the time.
All right, so it's Michael Bay. Are you ready to watch a movie with a little bit too much gratuitous female appreciation? How about a movie that makes fun of every female who's not a wildly attractive female? How about a movie that inexplicably makes a cube super tiny? Okay, well, all those things sound terrible, but this is Transformers, and that is all I have to say about this fantastic movie that has Rock'em Sock'em robots beating the crap out of each other. 5 stars.
I want to know if Machine Gun Kelly watches this movie a lot.
Is that your review? No, 5 stars. I wonder if Machine Gun Kelly watches this. 5 stars.
5 stars.
Does Megyn Kelly? Megyn Kelly.
Megyn Kelly.
That's exactly the review you would see like on Amazon or iTunes.
Does Megan Fox sit there and say, "You see that part? Yeah. After that, me and Shia went and banged behind the corner. Is that what happens?
Did they date? I don't know. Did they date? I believe they did. Right? Didn't they date?
I don't know.
I don't care. But. Just curious. She's not going to admit
it. I think at the time she was still married to Brian Austin Green or not. I don't know. I don't.
You're just making up facts. You honestly have no idea what you're saying.
I'm pretty sure they banged.
Okay. Well, my 5-star. I'm pretty sure I saw it in Inquirer at least. So it's got to be true. That was back when that was a thing. All right. There's nostalgia. There's humor. There's special effects. Shia LaBeouf at his best. Megan Fox at her best. Michael Bay's last real treat as a filmmaker. Transformers are certainly more than meets the eye, even if the robots cuckolding two teenagers on the hood of their car is extremely fucking creepy. 5 stars.
Megan Fox, in 2011, Shia did confirm that he hooked up with Megan for a few months while filming the Transformers movies.
Wow.
Boom!
We actually had to confirm this. This was important for the podcast, so we know if they hooked up. Dear God, man.
They called off their engagement.
They were engaged. They hooked up for a couple months. She dodged a bullet. I'm letting her know. She dodged a bullet. That's it for this episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And remember, critics, there is no such thing as a bad movie. Just movies that aren't good enough for you. You happy, Troy? I did the goddamn noise.
Roll out.